Welcome to the final presentation in our ninth series of talks on Kentucky Live, Southern Culture at its Best, sponsored by the Friends of WKU Libraries. My name is Brian Kutz, and as head of the Department of Library Public Services, I moderate this series with my colleague in the blue back there, Peggy Wright, with help from our webmaster, Haiwan Wan, and our instruction coordinator, Brian Carson. Our technical specialist tonight is Joshua Mosby, and Christopher McConnell designed our posters. Our speaker tonight is Kentucky's leading travel writer. He's a native of Elizabethtown, Kentucky, where he attended school, he said, and was mostly influenced by his parents, who encouraged him to pursue his passion for writing. He enrolled at WKU before transferring to the University of Kentucky, where he earned a BA in journalism while serving as the daily sports editor for the Kentucky Colonel. And after graduation, he began his career in journalism at Fort Bragg, North Carolina, where he edited a military newspaper before moving on to the advertising department at State Farm Insurance in Bloomington, Indiana. In 1971, he moved back to Bowling Green, where he continues to reside, and began an advertising and publishing business with the Penny Saver and Country Peddler. He served as the executive director of the Hilltopper Athletic Foundation from 1981 to 1993, and during that time did color commentary for the Hilltopper Basketball Network. In 1993, he became the executive director of the Bowling Green Area Convention and Visitors Bureau and helped bring the girls' Sweet 16 to Bowling Green while promoting Lost River Cave and the National Corvette Museum. Retiring, we were joking about that earlier, since he's busier than ever, he's devoted himself to writing. He writes a syndicated column for 7 Kentucky newspapers. He's the author of 8 books, with several more on the way. And his latest book, Kentucky Colonels of the American Basketball Association, The Real Story of a Team Left Behind, was published by Acclaim Press in 2011. Two of his most popular and enduring titles include Eating Your Way Across Kentucky, 101 Must Places to Eat, we ate at one yesterday, updated in 2006, and Shopping Your Way Across Kentucky, 2008, both published by Acclaim Press. When not traveling or writing, he enjoys gardening, landscaping, and spending what little time he has left with his wife, Laura. Please give a warm welcome to Gary West. Gary?
Thank you.
I want to comment. I did start out at Western in 1961. I know you've had Carlton Jackson speaking. A lot of you know Carlton. He's a prolific writer. I had him as a history teacher at Western in 1961. Now, the reason that I transferred from Western to UK was, at the time, Western had a couple of classes in journalism, and if I wanted to pursue a career in journalism, I really had to go to another school. But now it's kind of ironic that Western's communication department, journalism department, takes a back seat to no one in the state of Kentucky. It's just a wonderful area of study. There's two things that we like to do, I think, as Kentuckians. We like basketball, and we like to eat. And I've kind of covered them both here with my books here. You know, I have a chance to speak literally all over the state. I was talking earlier, let's see, I have been in Lexington. In the last 5 days, I've been in Lexington, Frankfort, and Louisville, and here speaking. And then Monday night, I'm going to be in Elizabethtown. But I love it. I'm asked to speak, and I've got the Kelly Coleman. Has anybody here ever heard of Kelly Coleman? He's the most legendary basketball player that ever played in Kentucky. He is still alive. He has every scoring record in the state of Kentucky. I mean, if you're not a basketball fan, this is a story about a man who played basketball. It's not necessarily a basketball book. He grew up in the mountains of eastern Kentucky. He has 68 points at the state tournament, which is still the record. 28 rebounds, if you know anything about basketball, 28 points. And I got to tell you a story. He had one game when he played in high school where he had 75 points and 41 rebounds in the same game. That's a career for a lot of us. He's playing against Maytown, Kentucky. Maytown coach calls timeout. The player trying to guard Kelly just comes over. He says, "I can't get near him. I think he's drunk. He's drinking. He smells like alcohol. He smells like whiskey." And the coach looked at him and said, "Son, find out what brand he's drinking because he's already scored 52 points against them. Kelly was a very confident player. Adolph Rupp called him the greatest high school player that he'd ever seen. Joe B. Hall told me, Gary, he's the only autograph I've ever wanted in my life. Joe B. used to coach at the University of Kentucky. Larry Conley, All-American at Kentucky back in the 60s, wrote the foreword for my book. But Kelly was a very confident player. He was Kentucky's first Mr. Basketball in 56. In 1960, after graduating from Kentucky Western, he didn't like Adolph Rupp. He didn't want to go to Kentucky. He was the number 9 player drafted in the NBA. So he was a heck of a player. He was getting ready to play Hindman High School up there. And the Hindman coach met Kelly's bus as it pulled in from Wayland, Kentucky in Floyd County. And he got there, the coach of the opposing team got down and he says, Kelly, he's walking with him. He says, we're going to hold you to 25 points tonight. Kelly, looking back over his shoulder, said, which quarter? Oh. I mean, that's how this guy was. He said, I don't care what you write about me as long as it's true. And I spent a lot of time. Have any of y'all ever been to Wayland, Kentucky? Any of you ever been to Prestonsburg in Floyd County? Wayland's in Floyd County. This guy cut a path. I mean, we've had him on all the radio shows. We released this book, and we're at the state tournament. Now, this is a neat story. We're at the state tournament, and we're in an area there. If you've ever been up to the Hyatt Regency and into Rupp Arena, you walk out of the Hyatt into Rupp Arena, and we were there signing books, and we had the books waiting for him. And I've got my publisher, Doug Sykes, with Acclaim. He's bringing the books on the way. It's Saturday morning. They open the doors. This couple, the crowd comes in, and this couple comes walking really fast right up to the table where I had the books. And they said, the line started to develop behind them. The lady said, will Mr. Coleman be here today? I said, yes, ma'am. He's back having the coffee, and he'll be out here in just a few minutes. She says, do you think he would mind having his picture made with me? I said, oh, there's no problem. She said, I was a cheerleader back in 56, but Shelbyville, when he scored 50 points against us in the first game of the state tournament. So I'm talking, and I'm waiting, I'm looking, and it's the line. I'm starting to count those dollars as the line just gets up. And she says, now you're Gary West, you wrote the book. I said, yes, ma'am, I did. I said, what's your name? She said, Martha Lane Collins. She said, this is my husband, Bill. I said, Governor, I am so sorry. She bought 4 of these books. It's just been reprinted, and they're going to start stocking them out here. But this book was selling on eBay for over $280 a few weeks ago. But it's just been reprinted, and I've got a company out of Santa Monica, California, that's looking at making possibly a book on this guy's life. It is quite a story. So I finished this book. And the natural progression was to write the book, Eating Your Way Across Kentucky. And this is actually the second edition. This is the updated version. But my wife and I would leave Bowling Green on the Thursday morning, and we would head out and get back late Sunday night. We were eating in 4 and 5 restaurants a day to cover all these restaurants. Of the 101, I've eaten in 99 of them. But I like to tell this story, and it's pretty much the truth. We put 25,000 miles on our car and 25 pounds on my body. But somebody had to do it. It was a lot of fun. So when I got back, some of the people in Bowling Green said, and this book's out of print, they're going to reprint it, said, well, we sure would like to have some of the recipes from those little restaurants because these are all mom and pop restaurants. Well, this is the hardest book I had to do was go back and get recipes. But we made a nice recipe book out of it. It folds, it lays flat. So we've got most of the restaurants in here gave us recipes to put in there. So after that, someone said, well, where are some neat places to shop? So I came up. Now this one, folks, cost me a lot of money. But we hit all the shops, and we visited them, and we had some great stories. And this is quite a history. A person can go through here and get really a sense of history of Kentucky. So I got that one done, and then somebody said, okay, we've got places to eat, we've got places to shop. What all is there out there to see and do for vacations? Well, then I came up with this book, and they are reprinting this in the next 2 weeks. This book sold out so quick, I can't believe it. 101 must places to visit in Kentucky before you die.
put a little urgency to it. Don't want to fool around and miss everything. So I got that one done, and then my good friend Lloyd Gardner and I,
we'd met at the state tournament. I'd known him at Western back in the 60s. He had been the manager for Coach Diddle's team, two of them, and Coach Oldham's team, but two of them. And he won a state championship at Fairdale. And he was the trainer for the Colonels in 8 of their 9 years in existence. And so we collaborated and did this book. Spent a year and a half on it. It's got over 300 pictures. It has got some awesome stories in here. We're very fortunate. Courier Journal runs the bestseller list. We were in it top 10, 14 out of 15 weeks. And on January the 28th, 2012, it was number one in Louisville as a bestseller. So this book has done extremely well. Are any of you sports fans at all in here?
Yeah.
Okay. Have you heard of Dan Issel?
Yeah.
Well, Dan Issel was a great player at Kentucky. 6'9", about 240. They called him the horse. Great All-American, played for the Kentucky Colonels. And about 2 years ago, before I started writing this book, I get a call from a guy in Glasgow, Steve Newberry. He owns several radio stations. He says, Gary, Dan Issel's had to cancel the Rotary Club, and can you come over? This was the night before. Can you come over and speak to us tomorrow in Glasgow? So I headed over there, and I go in, and the room is absolutely packed, standing room only. They think they're going to hear Dan Issel. So I go in, and I sit down, all 5'9 of me, Dan Issel, 6'9", 6'10". And I'm sitting there at the head table waiting to be introduced. And I see this guy in the back. He's got a basketball. We make eye contact. And I see him get up, and he starts walking with his basketball toward me at the head table. I said to myself, this is not going to end good. So he gets up to the table, and he said, Mr. Issel? I stood up, all 5'9 of me on my tiptoes. I'm not Mr. Issel. He said, well, I want you to sign my basketball. I said, I'm not Mr. Issel, but if I was, I'd sign it. He says, well, you know, I thought Dan Issel was a little taller than you. I said, yeah, he's got a foot on me. But he was terribly disappointed. And I was at a book signing on the Coleman book, and this lady walked up to me, and she said, man, I was there the day you scored those 68 points in the state tournament, which is the record, by the way, state tournament. I said, no, ma'am, you weren't there when I scored them. She said, don't tell me. I sat there and saw you score every one of them. I said, no, ma'am. She said, she had her book, and she said, man, I tell you, you're the greatest that ever played. She said, I've heard about you all my life, and I saw you that day, and I'll never forget it. I said, no, ma'am, I'm not Kelly Coleman. I'm Gary Western that wrote it. She says, you're not King Kelly? I said, no, ma'am. She went. So I have dealt with disappointment. I'll tell you a story. I write for Kentucky Living and Kentucky Monthly Magazines. In fact, I've had a cover story I had here not long ago was Kentucky Living on Tom Baker. He's a local guy here that's a hunter. And then I had one, Larry Conley and Tom Hammonds. Tom Hammonds, the voice of the Olympics, he's on there and does a lot of the things there. And then I had one here on Nicky Hayden, a world-class motorcycle rider from Owensboro there. So, but I write for Kentucky Monthly also. And I got a Steve Vess called me a couple of years back, and he said, Gary, I'd like for you to do a story on Chris McCarron, Hall of Fame jockey, several Derby winners. And he said, he's starting a jockey school here in North America. He said, North American Jockey School, boy, it's going to be something. He said, I'll give you Chris's number. And he says, you can call him. Now, it'll be several days before he gets back to you. But he's a nice guy. And just, so I call, and his voice mail comes on, and I leave a message. Chris, this is Gary West, and I'm doing a story on your new jockey school. Appreciate you calling when you get time. I know you're a busy man. Look forward to hearing from you. Gave a number. 20 minutes later, the phone rings. It's Chris McCarron. Boy. He said, hey, Gary, how you doing? I said, well, I'm doing fine. Appreciate you calling me back, Chris. He said, well, so we started talking about the jockey school. And one thing led another. He said, now, Gary, as much as you know about horses, I know you know, and I'm thinking, as much as I know about horses, I know what end they feed them on, and I have seen the Derby a time or two. I don't know much about horses. He's going on, hey, Gary, you know this and you know that. And I mean, I'm getting the greatest story in the world. And when we hang up, it dawned on me when I got my Sunday paper just before the Derby that there is a Gary West, a turf rider for the Fort Worth Star Challenge. And that's who he thought I was. So I milked it for a pretty good story and everything. And he'll be in there at this time in the Courier Journal. I can tell you, he's in there every year. He's one of them that they ask for his selection because he's a noted turf rider. But he thought that's who he was talking to there. And I didn't know that at the time. I tell you, Coach Diddle, a lot of you know who Coach Diddle is here at Western. I was fortunate enough to know him and Coach Rupp. Now, when I was in school, I don't think he ever knew my name, but he knew where I was from because coaches back then, Coach Rupp in Lexington called me by the town I was from. Hey, E-Town. Coach Diddle would say, hey, E-Town. That's where they called you from. I don't know, I guess they call their players that. But Coach Diddle, I heard him one time say, now, there's three parts to a good speech. He said, you want to have a real good beginning, and you want to have a real good ending, and you want to have a little bitty middle. That's what Coach Diddle said with his talks and stuff. I was at State Book Fair in Frankfort, and I had one of my books here, and I look up, and there's a line, and it's my high school English teacher, Judy Ecker. She had taught at Western a few years later, but she was in high school, and I had her in a class at Western, too. And she's in line, and she gets up there, and she was always a little bit sarcastic anyway. And she said, Gary, who would ever think that I would be paying you money for something you wrote? So there's a story there. I guess I've sort of been successful in spite of myself. I sometimes kid around and tell some of my friends that the best 3 years of my life were my junior year in college. I say that jokingly, but I did enjoy myself, and I was able to write for the papers and at Fort Bragg when I was in the military. They sent me to the Army Journalism School, and so I've just always been lucky. Then when I was at Western, I worked with Wes Strader for 13 years doing the color commentary for the Hilltopper Network. And then when I got in tourism, I got into the hospitality end of it. So it gave me a little bit of flexibility. It gave me some variety of things that I sort of have a knowledge of is tourism, hospitality, and sports because I have been working in those professionally. I started planning about 2 years. I retired about 5.5 years ago. And 2 years before that, I started planting. And I started planting some seeds, and I started writing my newspaper column. I have 7 papers that carry my column. It's called Out and About Kentucky Style. I don't know if you all have read it. It's in the local paper. It's in Somerset. It's in Murray. It's in Elizabethtown. It's in kind of points in between Monticello, Bargetown. And I'm just very fortunate. But when Lloyd Gardner and I got together, Have any of y'all ever heard of the Kentucky Colonels? I'm telling you, it's really a shame. And there are some stories in here that Louisville does not have an NBA team right now. Because at one time, they were literally on top of the world in the ABA. The ABA, there's over 300 pictures in here. Lloyd Gardner lived it, and I wrote it. But they were the front runners. They had a red, white, and blue basketball. They had the shot clock, the three-point play. They were innovative. They started charting offensive and defensive rebounds. They were the first to chart steals and stuff that you see in a box office. Some of you, are you familiar with the name Louis Dampier? Louis was one of the great All-Americans at UK. Was on the Rupp's runs in 66. It got beat by Texas Western in the finals. He was portrayed in the movie Glory Road and everything with Texas Western. Well, Louis Dampier was a fabulous shooter. And do you know Daryl Carrier? Do you know who Daryl Carrier is? He's a Bowling Green guy, an auctioneer, All-American at Western in the 60s. Great shooter. Lives down in Oakland now. Has a covered full court. And he's 71 years old, Daryl. Shoots baskets almost every day. He's got a covered court. And he can still shoot the lights out of it for 71 years old. But I'm talking to Louis Dampier, and I said, Louis, Adolph Rupp called you the greatest shooter that he had ever seen. I said, who's the greatest shooter you ever saw? He said, Daryl Carrier. He said, no question. So I go to Daryl Carrier, and I said, and have any of you ever met Daryl? He's a classic. I said, Daryl, who's the greatest shooter that you've ever seen? Daryl said, Daryl Carrier. Daryl is 71 years old and still proud of the shot. But some of the great players that were in the ABA back then, Dr. J, Julius Erving there, George Gervin, Artis Gilmore, Rick Barry, some of the announcers were Bob Costas. He's on all the time. Marty Brenneman, the voice of the Reds. He wrote the foreword for our book. He was the voice of the Virginia Squires back then. And Bob Costas was the voice of the St. Louis Spirit. And Bob Costas told the story in here. Bob, he wrote a blurb for us on the back here. He had a player, St. Louis, named Marvin Barnes. Marvin was one of these roughneck players and got on there. But they're in Louisville, and they're getting ready to fly out of Louisville after a game and the next morning, and they're flying to St. Louis. Now, St. Louis and Louisville are an hour different in the time zone. And so they're getting, so Marvin Barnes asked Bob Costas, what time does the plane leave? And he says, it leaves at 8 a.m. He says, when does it arrive? He said, it arrives at 7:59 a.m. And Marvin Barnes said, I ain't getting on no time machine. He said, I've worked too hard to get where I am now. I'm not going back in time.
So these were some of the stories that you get in here. The first owners, I've got an incredible chapter in here on the first owners, Joe and Mamie Gregory. Her family owned the Hope Diamond. She actually played with the Hope Diamond when she was a little girl. I'm talking money family. Her family's money was made in newspapers, silver mines, gold mines in Colorado in the 1800s, sold them for millions of dollars in the 1800s. So they owned the Hope Diamond. And so she buys this team. She married Joe Gregory, and they became show these dogs. And they had a show dog who was kind of the mascot for the Colonels. Ziggy was a little dog that they had. So Mamie, she was 23 years old, and she owned the Colonels. And she really in Louisville liked to flaunt her money. So she's driving down Broadway in Louisville downtown. And she goes by V.V. Cook Chevrolet, and she sees a red Corvette sitting over there. And she wants that, so she pulls over. And the salesman came out, and Mamie gets out of her pickup truck. And the salesman says, can I help you? She says, I want to buy that red Corvette. And he said, okay. He said, how would you like to pay for it? And she said, I would want to write you a check. He said, well, we need to go in and call your bank. And she said, I'm going to pay for it in full. And so they went in. And when he hung up the phone, the banker had told her, you can take a check from Mrs. Gregory all the way up to $52 million. So she bought the Corvette that day and drove off, and somebody came back and picked up her pickup truck. The Gregory's family, I mentioned that they own the Hope Diamond. Her grandmother, Mamie's grandmother, was involved in a way with the Lindbergh baby kidnapping. An FBI agent by the name of Gaston Means came to Mrs. Gregory's grandmother and said, I can get the little Lindbergh baby back if I can round up some money. Now, you know when this is? This is in the 20s, so she gives him $100,000, never to see him again. This is a corrupt FBI agent. And so she waited and waited, and she contacted the FBI and said, I've given this guy who was Gaston Means $100,000 to help get the Lindbergh baby back. And he did come back to her again for more money, and they were waiting for him, and he ended up dying in prison at Fort Leavenworth.
So there are stories like that. And an incredible story in this book is there was a young ball boy. For 9 years, he was the ball boy for the Colonels, from an early age up to a teenager. And so when the Colonels left and folded, when John Y. Brown and Ellie Brown were the owners, folded the team in 1976, they took $3.1 million, and he took $1.5 million and bought the Buffalo Braves. Louisville was left without a team, and he had an NBA team, and he traded the Buffalo Braves for the Boston Celtics. So he ended up owning the Boston Celtics, John Y. Brown did. A lot of people don't know that John Y. and Ellie Brown owned the team in there, if you don't know, if you follow the Colonels. Did any of you, you've heard of the Colonels, did any of you ever see them play in Louisville? Well, Darryl Carrier, and I go back to a Darryl Carrier story. Darryl's one of these that doesn't drink, and he put on a lot of basketball clinics and stuff. And one of the guys with the Colonels, one of the general managers, said, "Darryl, you don't need to hire an agent. I can get a commercial for you." He said, "Great." He said, "Let me line up a commercial for you." So Darryl says he comes home one day, and there's like 20 cases of Fall City beer on the front porch of his house. And they had signed him up for a deal to promote Fall City beer. And Darryl said, "Here I was. I don't drink a drop." So it was for several thousand dollars. And he says, so he had to call the Fall City beer company, and they came and picked them back up. But the Browns sold out. There's a great story in here when John Y. Brown, as you know, was the governor of Kentucky. And some of you may know, remember he was married to Miss America Phyllis George. And he told me a story of how he met Phyllis. He went to, he had contacted her, and he had flown out to Los Angeles to meet her. And he comes down the elevator, he'd gone up and picked her up in a room. They came down, they're standing at the Beverly Hills Hotel, and there, opened the elevator door, was Howard Cosell. Howard Cosell, if you remember him, the sporting guy. Well, he said, "Governor, how you doing?" And he introduced him to it. So they went over and sat down in the lounge, and John Y. said, for the next 2 hours, Phyllis sat there and hung on every word that John Y. said, and had to say. He said, "I didn't get a word in edgewise with Howard Cosell." He said, so finally Howard Cosell gets up to leave, and he said, who walks up and sits down but Warren Beatty, the actor. He said, "I was really out of my league then." And John Y. got a bill. Have any of you heard of Jimmy the Greek Snyder? Great gambler and everything. Jimmy the Greek Snyder was a friend of John Y.'s, and he actually introduced John Y. to Phyllis. And he sent him a bill for $100,000 for making that introduction. Now, in order to find out if he actually paid it, you've got to buy the book. But a good story Louis Dampier is telling me about a meeting with Coach Rupp. Coach Rupp was Louis and Dan Issel's coach in college, and Rupp was a disciplinarian and really tough, and they got to know each other when they were the pros, and Adolph Rupp came over, and John Y. and Ellie hired him to be the president of the team for a year. They're on the road, and they go into a bar after one of the games, and Coach Rupp said, ordered a Bloody Mary. And Louis said, "Coach, I thought you were a bourbon man." He said, "Well, Louis, I was, but the doctor told me to get off of the hard stuff." You know, like the vodka wasn't. But, I know where I was with the ball boy, Jay Bauer. Jay Bauer was a young boy, been the ball boy for 9 years. The Colonels left town, he became distraught. He got into drinking, he got into drugs. His life took a downturn, He goes home one night, his dad's a deputy sheriff there in Louisville, and they got in a fierce argument over the way Jay Bauer's life was going. And because when the Colonels left town, his life went. He had been able to drop names about Artis Gilmore and Dan Issel and Dr. J and Rick Barry and all this stuff. They was no longer there, and he didn't have anything to really turn to for success. They got in an argument, he murdered his parents there in Louisville. And he claimed it was an attacker came in and all this stuff, and they were getting ready to arrest him. Jay Bauer, the young man at 23 years old,
put him up at the golf house, and he was going to turn himself in the next morning. And it was an unbelievable chapter to write. He jumped out of the 16th floor window at the golf house and went through the Archibald Cochran atrium there in the golf house to kill himself. But that whole chapter, I interviewed the detective, I interviewed the general manager of the golf house, I went into the room and saw what was there, but it was an incredible chapter. Probably the most compelling chapter that I have in this whole book was the one I wrote on Jim McDaniels. That Jim McDaniels was probably, no, he, it's not probably, the greatest player to ever play at Western. Led the team to the 71 Final Four, an unbelievable story. He signs early. When I say he signed early, he signed a professional contract before his playing days were over, as did a lot of the players. Two or three of them were caught. Jim was one of them. He talks about in here, we spent hours upon hours. Jim cried, I mean cried, sobbed out loud in detailing how it all came down and how embarrassed he was because Western then had to relinquish their third place finish in the 1971 NCAA tournament. They had to forfeit their money that he had gotten in because Big Mac had signed early. But it is an incredible chapter of how unscrupulous agents came in and signed him and gave him a briefcase full of money and signed him to a contract worth millions and then didn't deliver after it was all said and done. It is a compelling chapter in here on a guy that is still lives here in Bowling Green. And I know when I took the book out to Jim, I gave it to him. He held it to his chest like this and started crying. I had to turn around and leave the room, so it was very emotional. The book, you can pick and choose. It's one of these books that you can jump around and read the different chapters in it. It's got some unbelievable stories about the Browns. There's two things that I didn't think would ever happen to me in my life. One of them is that John Y. Brown would call me just to chit-chat over the phone. But what he was really doing was calling to see how I portrayed him in this book and wanted to know if he could get an early copy of it. The other thing I never thought I would do was to spend the night in the castle outside of Lexington in Woodford County. I got invited up there to write a story on them and to spend the night in that place was something because I'd gone back, it seems like, since the 60s, and I never dreamed that Jerry West would ever get behind those walls to even see what that place was like, but it was a lot of fun. Hubie Brown, who is an NBA broadcaster today, and boy, I mean, he had colorful language and cussed a lot and yelled a lot as a coach, and his Van Vance, who's a Western grad, Van broadcast the Colonels for years. And Hubie's wife's back in Louisville, and she can hear Hubie coming across over the radio cussing. So she calls WHAS and says, get the word to Van to tell Hubie to stop cussing. And Van said, I wasn't going to tell Hubie to stop cussing. He said, tell Claire that I'll just try to talk a little louder.
So that's the way that they were doing that.
I tell you what, Lloyd Gardner, Lloyd's quite a guy. He's going to be at the book fair with me Saturday, signing the books. Lloyd gets a call after the Colonels fold. And they tell him at Freedom Hall they're getting ready to throw in the dumpster all the Colonel uniforms, all the pennants they had, all the stuff. They're no longer all the basketballs. If he wanted anything, come get it. Well, he scurried around and got his dad's truck and went out there and loaded a lot of that stuff in his truck and took it out and stored his dad's barn in Fairdale, Kentucky. It stayed there for 25 years. And, boy, you talk about it increasing in value. And when he started pulling this stuff out, it was unbelievable. Those basketballs sell for $3,500 a piece now, an ABA basketball right there. And even more if you can find one with George Mikan, who was the commissioner of the ABA back then, one of the great Hall of Fame players. He has Dan Issel's uniform, Artis Gilmore's uniform. He has sold probably $60,000 worth of stuff on eBay. And he's still got like a museum in his basement. And he has bought and records and press releases and everything. And he is the authority on the American Basketball Association. when we released this book in November in Louisville at 4th Street Live, we didn't know, we put the word out. We had a place they made available for us, downtown Louisville, 4th Street Live. We had over 1,000 people that showed up. We signed and sold books for 3.5 hours. The line was backed up out the door. People were bringing by balls and posters and programs to sign and everything that they had saved. And Dan Issel looked over me and says, you know what? We may be more popular today than we were back then. But it's quite a story. It makes a wonderful gift if you've got a sports fan in your family. The pictures are worth the book. It's just unbelievable, the collection that Lloyd had that he had saved. He had a diary, and he kept a diary of this stuff. You know, a lot of us go through life, and we don't really have the presence of mind to recognize where we are. I think of all the trips and travels and the coaches and the celebrities I've been around. If only I'd gotten a picture made with them, if I'd done this. Lloyd recognized where he was in life. And a lot of us have been in the company of people and said, man, if I'd have only done this. Lloyd did it. Lloyd did it. And that's what's made this book. But there's some neat stories with the Coleman book. I'm glad that's going to be back out here. But this book right here, the most often asked question is, where are we going to eat tonight? I'm taking the guesswork out of it right here with this book right here. And it has been a huge seller across Kentucky. But the shopping book makes a nice gift if you're looking for somebody that's hard to buy for. Don't know the size, don't know the color, but all these books. So I'm not very good at anything. I've always said I'd rather be lucky than good. And I have been very fortunate in my life to have an athletic background, to be the associate AD at Western for 13 years, and then be the director of tourism, and now be able to fulfill a goal that I wanted to do since I was a little boy, was to write. I worked for a couple of years in the home office advertising department with State Farm Insurance in Bloomington, Illinois, writing copy for brochures and this and that. So I'm having the time of my life. I'm going to open it up. Anybody got any questions? Any questions?
Well, I had a couple. One, about Mrs. Gregory and the $100,000 fraud. The guy who came back to catch her again for some more money, what did he do with the $100,000?
I don't know. He spent it. It was a scam he was running.
Yeah.
And they called him one of the first corrupt FBI agents ever. But he went to prison and died in prison, like I said, before they were. But she never got her money back. But it shows the wealth that she had in the 1920s to be able to donate $100,000 for a cause she believed in. But this story on the Gregories is the most unbelievable. You talk about the lifestyles of rich and famous they had. It was just unbelievable.
Yeah.
And they were out of North Carolina. But they had the Hope Diamond, and I think it's in the Smithsonian today.
It is.
You mentioned in the book that there's a chance for a franchise for the Kentucky Colonels in Kentucky, and they can't get that money. And here we have these people off in a yacht in the Bahamas. And a call comes to tell us the story.
Yeah, the call. They're down there enjoying life, and they got a few dogs are showing. And a guy named Joe Hewlett is trying to round up somebody. And somebody said, well, there's this Joe Gregory. There's the Gregory's down there. He's a basketball fan. Call them. So they, in fact, he's on the boat today with the governor of Nassau that day and in the Bahamas. And calls him and says, we can get, if you got $65,000, we can get you the right to a franchise for the NBA Kentucky Colonels. So they hurried back to Louisville, and when we interviewed her, she says, now I want to make this perfectly clear. It was my money, and I bought this team for my husband. And she did. They were so unorganized with the draft of the players that first year, and they didn't have anybody knew how to run a professional team. And so Joe Gregory and Joe Hewlett and a guy named Bill Mott were on their way to Oakland, California for the draft. And all they had was a few of these sports magazines that they had to look and see who players coming out of college were. Well, it was so confusing that they had drafted this guy, and they got a telegram back from him. He said, there's got to be a mistake. He said, I am a 55-year-old, 5'6" college professor at Kansas State. I don't play basketball. And they had drafted him for the Colonels. So that's in there. But it's just little quirky stories like that of how it came about. They stepped up when nobody else would.
Other questions?
What was the castle like?
Well, it was. It's nice. Yeah, I'm telling you, it's very nice.
And I've always wanted. I've driven by that a lot of times.
I'm telling you right now, I had to pinch myself. I told my wife, I said, I can't believe it. I mean, it's like, it's, you know, it was $500-$600 a night is what they say it goes for. And then the chef prepared to call our house a couple days ahead of time. Gave us a choice of three entrees to order from and everything. So we had our time for our sitting, and we were in there with maybe three other people while we were eating dinner. On top of it, there's a kind of a little walking track, and then there's a hot tub and then a sauna up there. The view on the very top is, you can look over and see Keeneland kind of down the road, and little parts of it, and some horse farms. And it was nice. I probably won't ever go back again, but I've been there.
Is there a story in the area as to why that was built?
Yes. And it was a guy out of Eastern Kentucky who made a lot of coal money. A lot of coal money there, and he and his wife had been in Europe. And he promised her, she wanted a castle, he promised her that he would build her a castle. So they came back to Kentucky, and they picked up that land. It's actually in Woodford County. It's where it sits, not in Fayette County. And his name was Martin, Charles Martin. And during as it was being built, things happened, they got a divorce. And it sat there a long time. It's been burned. A person came in there and was getting ready to rebuild it, sank a lot of money in it, and mysteriously burned one night. And I've seen pictures of that. Then another guy came back in, and he put a lot of money into that thing, and it's nice. I have no idea how it's doing financially. With this economy like that, I guess there's people that can spend that kind of money, but I'm not one of them.
Other questions? Yeah, right here.
I was just wondering about the restaurant. How many did you find that
you
didn't
even
come top of?
Probably, and that's a good question. Because if I had gone into restaurants without pre-qualifying them, I'd still been trying to write that book. So here's what I did, because I have a tourism background. I called all my tourism people that I know across the state. I had been very fortunate to be a president of a couple of tourism associations, and I'd say, okay, tell me, I'm not looking for a chain restaurant. Tell me, if somebody walks into your office and you say to them, don't leave here without eating at such and such, give me a couple of local restaurants. So then I would call the restaurant, and then I would say, hey, I'm thinking about doing a story. Would you be kind enough to send me a copy of your menu and a little history of your restaurant? I tried to qualify them, but they had to be in existence at least 5 years. So there were, I probably went to 20 that didn't make it, but I pre-qualified them so that we could get this out of the way. So I knew they were going to be fairly good, but I went there and I'd say, now I'm not looking for a full course meal. Because boy, if you go through that book and see some of the pictures of me sitting there at the table, I'm telling you what, it's full-blown meals. Because when you're eating in 4 and 5 and 6 restaurants a day, it was a little bite of this, a little bite of that, and you're on the next one. And you wanted to sit there and eat. It was so good that, but I didn't, they didn't pay anything to be in my book. And I like to say this, I've never had an original idea in my life, so why would I start now? I copied this after Duncan Hines, the travel guru who was from Bowling Green. And he did one national, and I did mine kind of on a state level. But I've got some people that are copying me now. Some other states are doing it. And a lady in Ohio, she sat next to me at the Kentucky Book Fair last year, and she watched people walk up and buy that book, and she said, I've never seen anything like this. And people would come by and say, got your book, got your book. I mean, hundreds of people in Frankfort, got your book. And she said, what in the world? Well, she lived in Ohio, and she's written a book, and I wrote the foreword for it, Eating Your Way Across Ohio. And she
used my book. It could be a franchise before long.
Well, anyway, my publisher loved me to do this book in Tennessee. Yeah. We think it works better in the South. She hasn't had the success that I've had. She's doing okay, but this book has, over the years, just literally come. Because what people do, and they do it with this one, they make a diary out of it. They'll write the date that they ate in a restaurant, and they'll write what they had, and they might even get the manager's own sign, and then they're passing this on to their kids and grandkids. Because the books are well constructed. They claim if the dust jacket ever gets torn, all these books have the cover fixed here. Because, you know, sometimes you buy books and the dust jacket will get torn and you're not really sure what book it is. And so anyway, that's one of the things. But this is a fun book. I had a guy about a month ago that called me from Louisville. He said, "Mr. West, I've eaten every one of them. Now, five of these are closed." He said, "I've eaten every one of them." And he said, "I've got everybody's autograph. I've even got Byron Crawford, the member who wrote the forward for him." He said, "I've got everybody's autograph at yours." He drove down to Louisville. He came by my house. And my wife, for the first time, I signed it. He says, "Ma'am, I'd like for you to sign it, too." It's the first time she's ever been asked to sign a book.
Might be a future app on YouTube, you know. But
yeah, really. Really.
And I've eaten it. 95. One more question.
Yes, sir.
What advice would you have for someone who wants to get into journalism?
Write every chance you get. Work for the school papers. Your school paper, or where are you now?
Western.
If you get a chance to work for the yearbook, volunteer to do things with the College Heights Herald. There's all kinds of publications. There's the Flair, there's the Southern Soaky Happenings, there's the other one that does the entertainment.
Amplifier.
Look around and see what people are looking for things, and just get your byline on as many things as you can to start to build a portfolio on a resume. All right. Don't be worried about the money right now. And here's the thing, a person in communications, you have so much flexibility. You can work for a radio station, you can work for a TV station, you can work for a magazine, you can write books, you can work for a newspaper, you can work for a PR firm, you can design brochures, you can write copy. When I was at State Farm, I wrote brochure copy. It's what I do. That, I think, is the most flexible education you get is a communication degree. And just set your sights on it and don't quit.
Well, on that note, and Peggy for Mr. West.
You said it was going to be fun. It really is fun.
Well, thank you. I didn't want anybody to go to sleep. I didn't want anybody to go to sleep.
You can't eat that, but it'll be fun.
And I can't bounce it.
No, if you do, you're really in trouble.
Well,
but thank you so much. It's been
thank
fun.
You all. This has been a delight.
Again, thanks, and remind you that Gary will be signing books at our Southern Kentucky Festival of Books on Saturday between 9 and 2, and hope you'll join us.
If anybody wants to get one tonight, I'd be honored to sign it tonight.
Sign some over here. Thanks, and have a good evening.